Good Saturday morning to everybody, and welcome to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show, along with the Director of Family Services of the CCA, Chris Ratlitz, who is making some funny gestures to my left. I'm Gary Byron. Hey, Chris, what puts you in a really jovial, fun mood this morning?
I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing much better now.
Hey, you know when you get so tired that you're at the point where you just, everything is happy?
Yeah, yeah.
Everything is funny?
Everything is beautiful.
That's it. Just watching you do the intro, I thought that was hilarious. So I just broke up and
hilarious.
Had to laugh.
It's the same intro I give every Saturday morning.
And just goes to show you how tired I am.
That's right. You got like four hours of sleep last night, right?
I don't know if I got that much. Yeah, I think I did. Uh-huh. But it was peaceful.
How was your week, by the way? Incidentally, nice to see you in person. I know the last 2 weeks you were on the road. You did the road from the show, so it's great to have you back in the studio.
I did the road from the show, yes.
Yeah. The show from the road. Did I say that?
You did.
Maybe I'm the one that's tired. You did the
show.
And
I'll be the first to point out.
Thank you. You did the show from the road over the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So it's great to have you in the studio.
Well, actually, it's good to be back. This is the first weekend. This weekend is the first weekend that I've had in months that I haven't had all kinds of things going on that, you know. So it's the first time that I get to relax a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's nice. Good.
Looking forward to it.
All right.
How about you? You're looking good. Still skinny as ever.
I put on a couple pounds.
Have you?
Yeah.
I don't know where.
It's two. No, I literally.
Oh, two.
I put on literally 2 pounds. Yes.
I don't think I could ever care. I've got so much volume that 2 pounds on me is like, you know, sneezing.
Wow, that's one heck of a projectile.
No, it's just, you know, this, the moisture and stuff. It's, you know, never mind.
Yeah, that's a road you don't want to. We don't want to go down.
I don't think so. What are we? Wait, who? What? What show is this?
Something about Catholic, cemeteries or something.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
How's your? Since I haven't seen you in 4 weeks, a month here. What have you been up to? How have you been?
Well, it was good. I actually had the opportunity to take a week's vacation, so that was pleasant.
Was it a true vacation or a working vacation?
No, I really shut down the computer and didn't do a whole lot of things with it. I'm an early riser, as you know, so I'm usually up 4:30 in the morning at least. And so even on vacation, I can't keep myself in bed that long. So I'll get up and I'll check emails, but that's it. That was it. End of the day. It was long walks on the beach, pickleball for 3 hours. It was just a wonderful time. And then after that, I had a trade show in Miami that I had to go to, and that was very nice, but still very busy. And so, yeah, it was good. It's been a good couple of weeks.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Miss being here with you, though, I have to admit.
I know how you feel.
Absolutely.
Because the feeling is mutual. It's not the same, you know. When you do the show.
It's not.
I
can make funny faces and nobody cares when I'm on the phone. It's just not the same.
It's true.
I know.
All right.
And I do that frequently. Most times not by choice. It just kind of comes out. Hey,
your natural,
who's the guy?
Your natural facial expressions are humorous enough, is what you're saying. Yeah.
That can be interpreted as yes, I'm a funny looking guy. What can I say?
But looks aren't everything.
That's a good thing. Some of us would have nothing left.
Very true. Yours truly included.
I like to say I have a face for radio.
That makes both of us.
See?
Look at that.
It's amazing. Another thing in common.
Before we get into the nitty gritty of today's show.
Yes.
I want to talk really quick. I don't think something, probably a topic I don't think we've ever discussed that often. And that is, you guys are hiring.
Oh.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny. We're almost always hiring, it seems.
Okay.
You know, we've been very blessed. The business side of what we do has been very good.
Dying is one of those guarantees in life, right? Death and taxes, right?
That's what they say.
So either you become an accountant or you become a mortuary. What do they call that?
Undertaker?
Undertaker.
Funeral director?
Funeral director, undertaker. You work at the Catholic cemeteries. You know, you're guaranteed.
Well, there's some people that say it's an inflation and recession-proof business. But
that's true. I would agree with that.
So, yeah. I mean, I think when, you know, your time comes. So it doesn't matter what's going on in the economy, et cetera. It's just that's how it is. But from a business aspect, it certainly has its... I mean, everything impacts us. Of course it does. Because, you know, the bread and butter of what we do is pre-planning. That's what's most important for us in terms of looking at the future of Catholic families and taking care of those families from a long-term standpoint. An immediate need, of course, is emotional, and it needs to be handled very delicately and taken care of immediately. But 90% of what we do is pre-need. So if people are affected by the economy and things, and they don't have the capital necessary to, you know, purchase or stand behind the choices that they've made, mm-hmm. then it's very difficult. So, yeah, our business is affected. Absolutely it is.
What positions do you have available that you're hiring?
Well,
you're
primary, we are searching for family service advisors.
An FSA.
Yeah, okay. Who interact with families. We could use at least 2 to 3.
I would imagine.
And actually, 2 of them are right here in Bloomfield area.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep. So if there are people in the Bloomfield area or close by that feel that they would like to have an opportunity to help families through difficult times and also be able to not only earn a living for themselves and their families, but help families in their future and future planning and actually expand your family, because many of our FSAs feel like they've become family members of so many of the people that they deal with.
Sure, I can see that.
So it's a great position. It's very rewarding. You're a compassionate individual who has some empathy and
that's what I was going to ask. That's what I was going to say.
Knowledge of sales, then it's a great opportunity, I think.
I don't think, and I hope you don't mind me saying this, but I'm going to say it anyways. I can't imagine that's just a job for anybody. You hit the nail right on the head when you said compassion. I would think that's the first prerequisite that an individual must have if they're going to apply for a job like this. You must have empathy. You must have compassion.
I think one of the biggest things, Gary, is that you have to feel like you really want to give back, like you mm-hmm. want to do something that's meaningful. And I'm not saying that regular corporate positions and jobs that we all have aren't meaningful. They're all meaningful in their own way. But from the standpoint of really having an impact on families and their lives, you know, at the end of the day, you know you have helped people. And that's a great feeling. So if that's, I think to me, that's the primary requisite. You know, you have to feel like you really want to give all out to help others. Hmm. And if you feel that way, you know, that's a great place to work. It really is.
I'm thinking of being sensitive, being patient.
Sure. You know, of course. One of the things that I think is difficult for any of us is to take ourselves out of a particular situation. Okay. So if you have a family in front of you that is suffering and is in pain and emotional agony, distress, you have to be compassionate, you have to be empathetic, but you also have to understand that they're here for a reason. And you have to help them get to the end goal of what it is they're trying to accomplish, which, say, in this case, is to find the final resting place. So you have to educate them, and you can't allow yourself to be wrapped up in their emotions, which I find to be, I think, one of the most difficult things. Because as an empathetic person or as a compassionate person, you can't help but want to share the burden, okay, that someone is feeling. So we try and do that, but we also have to be cognizant of the fact that they came to us specifically to accomplish something, and we have to help them through that. So, yeah, it's a delicate balance.
Is that what you look for when hiring? I mean, I would imagine there's a process, and I don't care how book smart somebody is. I mean, really, you just mentioned some qualities that an individual must possess in order.
Yeah, it's almost like I don't want to give away my interview secrets because I'm serious. People often wonder, because I don't bring people into the office for the first interview. I usually take them somewhere, have a cup of coffee, maybe a light meal or something. And I do that for a number of reasons. One, my interviews usually are two hours long. I go through a lot, and I make sure people really understand what this position is, because there's a lot to it. Secondly, I watch how they interact with service personnel. I watch how they interact with a waitress. I watch how they interact with people that are walking by or whatever, okay? All little triggers that I'm always very sensitive to. And it gives me an opportunity to see how they interact with me when I'm trying to have a conversation with them and there's other distractions around and things. Because in an office environment, it's pretty much one-on-one or one-on-two or whatever. And it's not distracting, and it's you can focus. So I like to see when there's a little bit of things happening that might distract your focus to see how well focused you can stay. There's a lot of things. Yeah,
it's a lot of focusing.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I look for. I just, you know, I've given you a few, but there's others.
I don't want you to give away all your secrets.
No, it's not secret. Actually, helping people if they're interested, I'm giving them they need to worry or think about that.
All right, let's say someone's listening to this right now. Before we get into the meat of our discussions here this morning, how should they reach you then if they want to apply for, they want an application for this job?
Absolutely.
Or send a resume. How do they do that?
Well, the easiest thing is to go through our website, www.ccacem.com. Mm-hmm. The job is posted there. My information is posted there. They can contact me directly. That's fine. As long as you have a resume and send it to me, and yeah, I'll get a chance to give you a call, and you know, maybe we can talk and see what happens.
All right.
So that's always the easiest way to do it. Okay. It's through that.
All right. Good luck to anybody who wants to do that.
Yeah.
Again, just go through their website, www.ccacem.org. All right. This morning, Chris, I thought we'd talk about searching for not only service advisors, which we just did, but I wanted to discuss the seven sorrows of Mary.
The seven sorrows of Mary.
You know what they are?
Do I know what they are?
Yeah.
I do know.
What are they?
Well, I think it's... First, I think we should maybe step back a little bit because, you know, Mary comes to us in many different names. You know, our Lady of the Lake, Our Lady of Guadalupe, the
right.
Blessed Mother,
right.
All these different titles that she has. And all of them deal with, almost all of them deal with appearances that she's made throughout history. So Our Lady of Lourdes, Our Lady of Fatima, because she was at Lourdes, she was at Fatima. And each of those appearances, there's a special message that's associated with each of them, okay? What's interesting about Our Lady of Sorrows, or the Seven Sorrows of Mary, to which Our Lady of Sorrows, the title is attributed to, what's different about that is it's not a single appearance, it's her life. So the Seven Sorrows of Mary are high points in the life of Mary while Jesus, her son, was on earth, that call to mind the union of humanity, meaning mothers, with their children. Because these were all things that she experienced as a mother. Mm. So it's a very touching, it sounds terrible when you say the seven sorrows of Mary. It's like it's going to be so miserable. It is sad, but there's a huge, huge message there. Dealing with the humanity of people, dealing with the humanity of Mary and Jesus, where she experiences these sorrowful things and can connect, we as not only as humans, but women in particular as mothers, can connect with Mary, knowing that they may be going through difficult times, but the Blessed Mother did the same thing and went through horrible times also, and she had very sorrowful times. And there's a lot of good that comes out of this in the end, but the first one that you may or may not remember is the prophecy of Simeon. So when Jesus was brought to the temple for his blessing, circumcision, according to the Jewish tradition, there was a couple of people that used to hang around the temple all the time, and one of them was Simeon. When Simeon saw the baby Jesus coming into the temple, he immediately had this whole litany of things that he had to say to Mary about that. Quickly, I'm not going to read through
all of it. And he knew who he was.
Yeah, he knew instantly because he had been praying daily and asking God to see the Savior that he was going to send. And as soon as Mary came into the temple, Joseph and with Jesus, he jumped right up and he went to the parents and asked if he could hold the child. And they said, Lord, now thy servant can depart in peace, because according to thy word, mine eyes have seen the salvation which you have prepared in the presence of all people. Mary was completely, you know, mesmerized about what was being said about Jesus. But then he said, behold, this child is set for the fall and rising of many in Israel, and for a sign that is spoken against, and a sword will pierce you as if your own soul, that thoughts of many hearts may be revealed. Well, that's the first sorrow, the piercing of the soul of Mary at what's going to happen to her son. Okay? So that was really the first of the seven sorrows. The second is the flight into Egypt. So when, right shortly after Jesus was born, as you may recall, the three kings came to Herod and were saying to him that we have come because of the star, and they were very intelligent people, and they were coming to talk about the search for the Savior, because prophecy had said that when the stars align in a certain way and there'll be a bright star in the sky, which of course was, you know, the night he was born, that they would be coming and this would be the Savior and the new King of Kings. Well, Herod, of course, what did he do? He said, okay, I'm basically going to put a law out to the land that I'm going to kill every kid.
Up to 2 years old.
Every baby boy up to 2 years old, so I don't miss anybody, you know, in between. Well, after the visit of the Magi, Joseph, in a dream, received an angel telling him, take the child and flee to Egypt. Okay? So even as a baby, they were already on the run because of who Jesus was and who he ultimately would be. So that was the second sorrow of Mary. The third, when you pray the joyful mysteries, the fourth joyful mystery is the loss of Jesus in the temple. So what happens is they come to the temple with the whole family. Okay.
They thought they lost him.
And then they were leaving.
Yeah.
And they were gone for like a day, and they realized, hey, where's our kid? Okay. So this was another terrible sorrow. It was another piercing at her heart, because here she thought she had lost her child. So they come back to Jerusalem, and what do? They see him in the temple
preaching,
this child of 11 years old, preaching to rabbis and, you know, people. So that was the third. The fourth, of course, during his passion, was the carrying of the cross. Mm-hmm. And there's a period where he is carrying the cross when we do the stations of the cross. One of the stations is Jesus meets his mother, and she sees him carrying his cross on the Via Dolorosa, okay, the Way of Sorrow, which is what the street was called that he was walking down on his way to Calvary. And she encounters him and, of course, sees her son who'd been flogged, who is stripped to, you know, hardly bare clothes and carrying this heavy cross on his way to his execution, basically. So that's the fourth one. The fifth was the actual crucifixion, which we don't have to say anything about. It's obvious. The sixth was him when he was taken down from the cross, and then the seventh was when he was laid in the tomb. So you can take each one of those and see how any mother would relate to, in a very special way, what Mary had to go through. So it's kind of a great example in a way, because not only did she know this was coming, she experienced it, and she did it with great dignity because she understood what Jesus' mission on earth was and knew that this was what was foretold and knew that he had to go through this, yet it didn't change the fact this was her son and she had to experience it. So it's really, there's a lot to it. The seven sorrows of Mary carry deep meaning for us as Catholics. Anyway.
Folks, you are listening to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show. You can contact them toll free at 800-505-0050. Along with Chris Radlitz, Director of Family Services, I'm Gary Byron. How do Catholics then revere these sorrows?
Well, I think that the first thing is what I said a little earlier, which deals with the fact that it was a sign of humanity of Mary, and how Mary's sorrow relates to all parents, okay? Anyone who has a child can experience sorrow and suffering for whatever reason. So this is here it is, the mother of God, and look what she has to endure.
Mm-hmm.
Not, of course, to mention what Jesus had to endure, but the fact is this is the mother of this person, and she's enduring this. So there's a reverence there as not only her as spiritual mother, but also her as a human mother and what she had to go through. And in fact, when she went through her life and experienced not only the blessings of having the Son of God as your son, but also having experienced all the suffering, this is why she is titled from God himself as the mediatrix of all grace, because of all that she went through as a human, she can relate so well to the humanity that we all throughout history are going to exist in. And she's able to to offer this wonderful opportunity for graces to flow through from her son to all of us. So there's a big reverence in terms of how the sorrows in her life have led to the fullness of what she is as mother and mother of God and our mother.
So you think Catholics can relate to the characteristic of the Blessed Mother?
Well, I think that, remember, first, even though she is the Blessed Mother, she was first human. So yes, you know, relating to that humanity for all of us is extremely important because, as you know, we relate best to things that we know. And we're human. So we understand we kind of understand our own humanity to a certain level. And it, being able to relate to someone who is human and has experienced this terrible sadnesses. And I think one of the other wonderful things about this, Mary, not only in her love for Jesus, but in her love for all humanity, there's a prayer that deals with the seven sorrows. And if you meditate on these seven sorrows every day, Mary actually promised through her son seven promises that we would receive if we were to venerate ourselves to the sorrows that Mary has experienced. And she made these promises to St. Bridget of Sweden so that those who devote themselves to her sorrowful heart, she will promise these following things. One, she'll grant peace to your family. Now, that's kind of a big deal, I think, because peace to your family can come in many forms, whether it's, you know, children battling, whether it's husband and wife battling. She grants peace to your family. Second, you will be enlightened about the divine mysteries. The divine mysteries dealing, of course, with the rosary and what all the mysteries meant, which is extremely, I think, interesting that would be one of the promises, because many of us will pray the rosary, and there's 20 mysteries that are associated with the rosary. And as you pray the rosary, you're kind of trying to figure out what it all means, you know? Mm-hmm. Some of them are pretty self-evident, but there's always a deeper side. So I think being enlightened by that is important. She will console us in our pain and accompany us during all of our work. So it's almost like having a friend with you the entire day. I will give them as much as they ask for, as long as it does not oppose the will of my divine son or the sanctification of their souls. So if we pray to Mary under the auspices of her sorrowful heart, she's saying she's going to give us that which we ask for, as long as it doesn't interfere with the plan of her son and doesn't affect our sanctification. Fifth is, I'll defend them in spiritual battles with the infernal enemy, and I will protect them at every instant of their lives. That's kind of a great promise. She's going to be stepping between you and the devil for anything that he might want to do to you, okay? Not only that, but she's going to protect you at every instant of your life. What I don't know for sure is whether it's just spiritual or physical protection included also. But either way, it's a great benefit. The sixth is, I'll visibly help at the moment of their death. She guarantees you will see the face of your mother, which is one of the things that many Catholics always pray for, not for people that they know, which is a peaceful and happy death, right? Mm. Well, what could be better than if you're going to pass, all of a sudden see the face of the Blessed Mother staring you, you know, to welcome you home. And then she said the last one, which is really interesting. I have obtained this grace from my divine son, that those who propagate this devotion to my tears and sorrow will be taken directly from this earthly life to eternal happiness, since all their sins will be forgiven and my son will be their eternal consolation and joy. So if you pray and contemplate the devotion to her sorrowful heart every single day, It's almost a free ticket into heaven. Now, you know, you kind of say, well, wait. But the church says you have to have all these different things,
yeah,
right?
Confession.
Which is important. But here's Mary telling you, hey, she's not going against what the church is saying. She's saying, but in addition to, if you do this every single day, now, I don't know how many days that means. I don't know how, you know, you got to start when you're 2, you got to start when you're 50. I don't know. But I guess if you have a sincere heart and you are devoting yourself to the sorrowful heart of Mary and you pray the different prayers associated with the sorrowful heart of Mary and have that devotion, these are the promises that she says will come.
Known as the seven joys of Mary.
Well, no. Those are the seven promises. The seven joys of Mary are something completely different.
Well, I've only got about 2 minutes.
Okay. Honestly, don't know that we'd be able to get through them in 2 minutes. I'll try and just tell you what they are rather than giving you a little bit more information.
Perfect.
So the first is the Annunciation, okay, mm-hmm. which is the angel Gabriel coming.
Sure.
To tell her that, hey, you're going to be a mom. Yep. Congratulations.
Oh, yeah.
Second is the Visitation, which is when she goes to see her cousin Elizabeth.
Right.
Who's pregnant with?
John the Baptist.
John the Baptist. Yeah. Very good. The third is the birth of Jesus, the Nativity. Fourth is the Epiphany, which was when the Magi came to visit. The fifth is finding Jesus after he was lost in the temple.
Mm-hmm. All right. You just mentioned that.
Right. Yep. Well, that relates to the sorrow of losing him.
Mm-hmm. And then finding him. Yeah.
And then finding him. Sixth is his joyful resurrection, of course. And then the seventh is her being taken up to heaven and crowned Queen of Heaven and Earth. So when she passed away, and there's speculation as to the moment of her death, if she actually died and was immediately assumed into heaven, or at the moment of death prior to was assumed into heaven, because that's the fourth glorious mystery is Mary's assumed into heaven, body and soul.
How soon after the crucifixion of Christ or the resurrection of Christ did Mary pass?
I don't know what the timing was, but okay. She lived into her 80s,
oh,
so it would
she?
Have been a long time.
Wow, back then.
Yeah.
I didn't think people didn't live that long. I
right.
Back then.
So she lived, she lived a longer life.
Can and I'm sorry, I got literally
no,
a
fine.
Minute. We have some DOLs coming up, I know, for October, right? Is it too late to go into them, or I truly have 30 seconds?
You have 30 seconds.
I know.
In 30 seconds, I should be able to tell you.
Okay.
If I could find where I wrote down what all the DOLs were this month.
All right.
So
well, in the meantime, what I can do is give you some. You have them?
I do.
Go ahead, really quick.
October 14th at the Church of the Assumption in the Church Hall in Derby at 6 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
October 27th at Prince of Peace Parish. There'll be two, one at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. So you can register for these at our website, ccacem.org, or you can call 203-780-8414 in order to register. And it's a good idea to always register for these.
Let me give you once again that website for many reasons that we've mentioned this morning. It is CCACEM, as in Mary.org. And you can also call toll free 800-505-0050. Again, 800-505-0050. Chris Radlitz, Director of Family Services. I'm Gary Byron. Thank you so much for listening to the Catholic Cemeteries Association radio show. Until next time, have a good one, everybody. So long.